Isaiah 60:1-6. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons shall come from far away, and your daughters shall be carried on their nurses' arms. Then you will see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea shall be brought to you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multitude of camels shall cover you. The young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba shall come. They will bring gold and frankincense and shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Good morning and happy new year to everyone. A week ago, we were a small group gathered here, worshiping together the day after Christmas. And it's now a week later, the festivities are over. The cookies have mostly been eaten, mostly. I think Diane needs to make a few more. All the gifts, most of the gifts have been unwrapped. The tree might still be up, but is on the way to be taken down. Decorations put away. And for many of our kids, school starts again tomorrow. Sorry, Luke. And the regularity of life begins again. And I'm always a little sad to see the season pass. Although I'm grateful for the celebrations and the good memories that we're building for our children. And maybe I'm not alone in feeling a little bit down. Although being one of only about two extroverts in this congregation, it's likely that I am alone in feeling a little down when people have left and all the guests have left and the dishes have been washed and put away and the house is quiet. And I suddenly realize that the loneliness that I was covering up by the activities of the holidays is still there. Some of you struggle with darkness. I do. There is that physical darkness of this winter season. Thankfully, we're on the other side of that, the longest night now. There's the dark night of the soul, where questions about faith and meanings of God's presence make you feel stranded and lost in the dark. There's the darkness of depression, sometimes encompassing all the other darknesses. And we could go on. Social darkness, geographical darkness and despair, racism, sexism, etc., etc. We could go on and on. There is darkness in our world. When we get rid of all the busyness that fills our time, then what is left? Emptiness, longing, perhaps darkness. So there's a story running around on social media circles of a fascinating experience that some people had in seminary. At this time, this wasn't at AMBS, this was at a different seminary. At this time, they were taking turns researching and teaching their class about Isaiah's prophecies. One student was preparing a lesson on the 60th chapter of Isaiah, and that's what I read earlier, namely the first four verses. And this is what we often read during Advent. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. Darkness will cover the earth, thick darkness the people, but the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. So as part of her research into the passage, she went out and looked everywhere on campus for the darkest place. Eventually, she found it. It was a rarely used racquetball court in the basement of the main building. So to reach the racquetball court, you had to go down a couple of flights of stairs, through several fire doors, into this dark hallway, and there's the racquetball court. And it was likely to be completely underground. She discovered that when you go inside and close the doors and turned out all the lights in the hallway and all the lights in the court, it was really, really dark. And I mean scary dark. You could wait for your eyes to adjust to find the light, but there was no light. It was dark. So when it was her turn to teach the class, she brought the class down the stairs, through the maze of tunnels, closing doors, turning out lights after them, and into the racquetball court. She instructed the class to sit down, put your back against the wall, get yourself comfortable. You are people who live in the land of deep darkness. And then she turned out the lights. So some of the seminarians gasped. Some clasped the hands of their neighbors sitting beside them. After a minute, it got really quiet. And there was this deep, deep darkness, a thick darkness. And there they all waited silently, minute by minute, uncomfortable, maybe a little frightened. Eventually, she spoke into the darkness. "For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people." And then she struck a match and lit a small candle. "But the Lord will arise upon you, and the glory will appear before you." And by no means was this candle lighting the whole space in that racquetball court. But that light changed everything. Within the light of that small candle, people saw each other and themselves. They saw surprised faces. They saw puzzled faces. They saw tear-streaked faces. They saw joy-filled faces and awed faces. For those in deep darkness, a small light, so small relative to that darkness, that light made all the difference. The size of a little flame in the vast deep darkness is irrelevant. The size doesn't matter. What matters is that there is light. Light is still light, and darkness cannot overcome it. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn. Could you imagine that? Now, I don't particularly like winter. Here or anywhere. Bryce is rolling his eyes. He's like, "Oh, just deal with it." I know. I try. And I think that we all do. But boy howdy, I gotta say, winter here in Washington is far... Can I say far better? Is that even a grammatically correct term? Far better? Much better? Way better? It's greater than winters in the Midwest, for me, anyway, where the sky is constantly overcast. There might be more hours of daylight in the Midwest than here, but it is not brighter. But there is something magical that happens here, away from the busy street lights and the other light pollution. Especially in the winter. I just love this part. And this is the best part of winter for me. When it gets really cold, it seems as though the heavens are closer, or at least magnified through that icy air. There's something about the sky that is profound when you look up at night. And I'm glad that I can look up and be covered by God's blanket of stars. And I wonder what it is at the end of those stars. Maybe more stars, probably. And then more stars and galaxies beyond that. And then I start feeling just a mite insignificant and a little bit more uneasy. Now, I can't deny this. I can't deny that God created this. It's just, this is what I know. And I don't know how many years or days or hours it took for God to create the heavens. Maybe it took 6 days, or maybe it took countless eternities. But what I do know is that God created this, and it is profound. God is still creating this, and it's bigger than I can imagine. So we've tried to explain the vast and wonderful of our whole existence as humanity, but we can't explain everything away. And when it all comes down to it, the stars are huge. Beyond the largest man-made building, beyond the largest animal, beyond the Himalayan mountain range, these are all finite compared to the power of our medium-sized sun. Let's show the next picture. There's a little bit of Earth relative, and that's a solar flare when you think of it. These are pictures from NASA. It just blows me away. And this in itself is dwarfed by the expanse of the Milky Way, which nests in the, it's just a twinkle in the eye of the universe. Those are from the Hubble, what is it called? Telescope, thank you. It's like microscope, no. And those are galaxies. This is profound. This all nests in the palm of God's hand. And we cannot even fathom this profoundness. Our God is mystifying. We cannot explain it. Our words written, spoken, or even our inkling are nothing compared to the imagination, the plans, the action, and love of our infinite God. We are so insignificant. I don't understand it. And sometimes I lie in bed thinking, what does this all mean? Why am I here? I think of my body and my cells and all parts that work in me so finitely, and I am amazed. We read that God knows all the single hairs on my head. How can that be when God has created this? When I look at your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are we that you are mindful of us, men and women that you care for us? We are overwhelmed by the problems facing our world. What can I do about climate change that will ever make a difference? What can I do about world peace, alleviating poverty, discrimination, hunger, violence? Do I even want to touch these issues, or is it just easier to leave them alone and thus contribute to them? What about the problems facing our families? And I've heard these before. Our family is dysfunctional. We don't get along. We use each other. We are cruel to each other. We never talk together. And there seems to be nothing we can do about it. And then we're struck down by our own personal problems. We are lonely. We are grieving. We don't like who we are. We can't seem to stop our hurtful actions. We wake up in the morning in the same body, be it fat, skinny, gray-haired, aching, or just not good enough. Or maybe we see no hope for humanity, that our government is not how we want it to be. What are our children learning in school? How can we counter the ill effects of the world through the love of our home? Where is God in the midst of peace talks and care for the earth? Where is God when cancer and death ravage our community? Where is God when millions of children are orphaned because of AIDS? Where is God in the midst of this mind-blowing pandemic? In Jesus' time, it was no different. Except maybe they didn't have electricity and the internet or any global communications like we do now. But they still wondered all the same essential questions. Where is God in our cry for freedom? Where is God when I am hungry? And we can easily say with Isaiah, with the people then, and with the people in Jesus' time, for darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the people. Some of my favorite books back from when I was a kid, and even now, are the Kairos trilogy books by Madeleine L'Engle. A Wrinkle in Time, A Wind in the Door, A Swiftly Tilting Planet. Now, I don't know how many of you have read these, but they are my favorite. These books, while written for a youth and young adult audience, they speak profound truths of the nature of love between sibling and parents and children and friends and God and humanity and the earth. And now that I think about it, I think that my theology has been shaped by these books. They seem a little dated, written in the 60s and 70s, but that's the joy of science fiction fantasy. It is timeless. In the book A Wind in the Door, Madeleine L'Engle tells of an epic encounter between the power of evil and the one who created and loves and names all things. When all things seem lost, when it looks like all, even the cosmos, are being X'd into nothingness, a star is born. The main character, whose name is Meg, her brother's school principal, Mr. Jenkins, and their teacher, Blajny, are transported into space to witness this stellar event. Meg looks around. Ahead of her was a tremendous rhythmic swirl of wind and flame. This was a dance ordered and graceful, and yet giving an impression of complete and utter freedom, of ineffable joy. As the dance progressed, the movement accelerated and the pattern became clearer and closer. Wind and fire moving together, and there was joy and song, melody soaring, gathering together as wind and fire united. And then wind and flame, dance and song, cohered into a great swirling, leaping, dancing single sphere. Meg heard Mr. Jenkins, incredulous, "What was that?" Blajny replied, "The birth of a star." Mr. Jenkins protested, "But it's so small, I could hold it in the palm of my hand." And then an indignant snort, "How big am I?" You must stop thinking about size, you know. It is both relative and irrelevant. And then all thoughts dissolved in the glory and the melody of the dance. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon you. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. You'll see and be radiant. Your heart shall thrill and rejoice. It's not enough that God creates the vast recesses of space, the giant orbs ringing through the sky. But this God, whose hand formed the galaxies, birthed and cried for food. This God was nursed at his mother's breast, was changed and swaddled, was held tenderly, and was loved. So finite, so infinite. Size is both relative and irrelevant. And this God who created the galaxies and the molecules in an ant caused the dawning star, the star in the east that the Magi followed. That star signaled the birth of hope. We read in the Gospel of John, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it, did not understand it. Relative to the darkness, the light is tiny, but oh, so significant. And maybe that's the thing. It's not that the light obliterates the darkness. It's simply that the light is there. God enters into the darkness to sit beside us. God refuses to dwell in the heavens above and from a safe distance to watch the drama of human life unfold here on earth. No. Instead, God climbs right into that manger, enters our lives right in the middle of the darkest hour just to be with us. Later in his life, Jesus said to the crowd and to us, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden." We sing songs about letting our light shine for all the world to see. We are the little insignificant candles in our world of darkness. Isaiah tells us, "Arise and shine, for your light has come." And we light our candles on Christmas Eve. And as we light our candles on Christmas Eve, Christ's light is passed to us in the same way. It alights on us. And this light is the light of love and hope and meaning. Our light, our life, while tiny in the grand scheme of things, our light is not irrelevant. We shine. God does not love the stars more than us, even though there are a gazillion times bigger than we are. We are all held tenderly in God's hands. We are named and loved and valued. I want to end with this poem, also found in her book, A Wind in the Door. Madeline L'Engle writes an exquisite poem of the naming of creation, of the songs of the Creator. "I fill you with naming. Be butterfly and behemoth. Be galaxy and grasshopper, star and sparrow. You matter. You are. Be. Be caterpillar and comet. Be porcupine and planet. Be sand and solar system. Sing with us. Dance with us. Rejoice with us for the glory of creation. Seagulls and seraphim, angel angleworms and angel hosts, chrysanthemum and cherubim. Be. Sing for the glory of the living and the loving, the flaming of creation. Sing with us, dance with us, be." They were not her words only. They were the words of the oak, of the rooting acorns, of all the singing fields, the laughter of the greening harvest, earth itself, all the cells, all the human hosts, the earth, the sun, the dance of the star whose birthing she had seen, the galaxies, the cherubim and the seraphim, wind and fire, the words of the glory. The one who began creation also began a good work in you. Your light, while insignificant in the grandeur of creation, is so relevant. You are relevant. The darkness will never overcome you. Christ's light shines in all places. Friends, in your time of darkness, do not be afraid. Even when you cannot see, you are not lost to God. The light will come. The light is here.